mics are on, you're not allowed to say certain things, Bill.
Oh, sorry.
That you get booked.
Yeah. We'll have to go back and listen to hear what it sounds like when we actually...
We got to employ the dump button.
Good job, Jared. You were like cat quick on that. I'm like, what was that sound anyway? He's like, it's the thing.
He'd be good at whack-a-mole.
Yeah, you would, actually. That's good training for that. So, hey, both hours are starting the same way. This is the second hour of We the People Radio, and my name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff. And our sponsor this hour is Team Power. If you need a John Deere or Kubota tractor, or if you just need a tractor, you need to go up and talk to them because they handle the number one and number two lines.
Yeah, don't buy a crummy tractor.
No, don't buy a crummy tractor. They're here today, gone tomorrow. Go up and talk to these guys. They handle the number one and number two tractor markets in the country, and they'll make you a great deal. They're a full-service dealer, parts sales service. They'll do a good job for you. They're at 3119 Twinview Boulevard, and you can reach them at 226-9226 or online at readingtractors.com.
And if you're in Reading and you want to go there next week, you just go to where the smoke is the thickest right before you get stopped on I-5.
And can't go any further, yeah. If they stop you on the freeway, you went too far.
You went too far. Turn around and go back.
Turn around and go back. There you go.
When the smoke begins to clear, they're probably on your left. Isn't that about the way the directions go these days? So, all right. Today is all about South Africa. And if you missed the first hour, well, I'm sad for you because you missed a big chunk. But you can always go to the website, wethepeopleradio.us. We post all of this. And I've got links for all of the other shows that we have done with our guest, Dr. Harry Bouyans. And we've done five other shows, actually. So we did the history of the Dutch. We worked on farm attacks, the politics of white genocide, which is really the whole thing. But we really focused on it, that show. And then Obama headed over there just to fan the flames of white genocide, which was terrific. And last time he was on was August 12th, and we talked about who stole the land.
Yeah, I'm not saying we're like all that in a bag of chips in the news world,
but
it seems kind of funny that after we did a series of shows on this topic, it's all of a sudden hitting national news and some of the other
Harry, tell me why that happened.
Shows.
It'll ruin your plans. But, so we'll just leave that go.
We can jump right over that now.
Bill's taking total credit. And Harry has a terrific book, Amabulu, The Birth and Death of the Second America, definitely worth a read, along with his blog, which is terrific. And we put the link on there because it's long. It's a WordPress address. But if you go to wethepeopleradio.us, you will find it right there. And or Harry's website, which is cliffwoodfog.com. So it's C-L-I-F-F. WOOD, and then Fog is spelled FOGGE.com. I think you'll get a tremendous amount of information. So just, you know, in case you haven't tuned in before and you're just catching this, Dr. Harry Bouyans is an internationally recognized, multiple award-winning PhD defense and aerospace physicist. He is originally from South Africa. His family has, excuse me, easy for me to say, a 360-year bloodline in that country. He currently lives in Vancouver, Canada, where he moved in 2000 because the situation in South Africa was becoming untenable, I guess we'll say, and that's been explained a number of times on shows. I think you'll really find that this information is very scientific, based in fact. This isn't just an opinion show, and it'd be good for it behoove Americans actually to pay attention. And if you live in rural America, would really behoove you to pay attention, because this is what's happening in rural America with gas on it. So never say never. Things that start one place come to the other. The tearing down of the statues, the monuments in the U.S. started right after they did that in South Africa.
It's really sad,
2 weeks,
too,
actually.
Because they want to rewrite our history, and yet...
Well, they've rewritten South Africa, so, I mean, again, it's all happening there first, so...
Yeah, but these are the same people that can't tell you who the president is. I mean, it's really frustrating.
Hopefully they don't vote. Okay, so where shall we go this hour?
Well, I thought before delving into the numbers...
Yes?
I should address the matter of why the liberal media... has assumed the position that it does. Now, you're going to tell me this is old hat, but I want to hear, I want to have you hear it through the ears and eyes of essentially a 26-year-old white South African kid in 1980 in IBM at Yorktown Heights in New York. That's me. That's where I worked. And I shared an office with a Danish professor who happened to be a devout communist. So he was a socialist of the Northern European type that I think Bernie Sanders loves, or Sanders loves. I would like to read you two paragraphs out of my book that describes that experience and will set, I think, all of this in context, because it's been a guiding experience through my life. And it will hopefully tell some of these folks who adhere to these philosophies what it looks like through the eyes of someone else without any yelling and screaming. You know, I don't need the left-right divide of the U.S. to tell me how to think. I've lived this stuff.
Thank goodness.
This gentleman shared an office with me, and he explained to me that he thought the Russians had actually botched the entire principle of communism. Clearly, he didn't think they applied it strictly enough. And at the same time, one day, you know, he mouthed off about South Africa, and I eventually asked him, but have you actually ever met anyone from Africa besides myself? And he said, yes, he had a young black student in his class in Copenhagen. And I asked him, and what was the background of that young student? And he said, oh, he was an ambassador's son. Great. So his exposure to the realities of Africa is an ambassador's son.
Who I'm sure lived just right with everybody else.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure he was one of those fly-encrusted kids in the village with kwashiorkor and bad feeding. Okay. And then one day he came back, one Monday morning he came back, and you know, he's this huge, tall, 6'6" creature. All he missed was the horned helmet on the head to be a complete Viking. And I joked with him often about missing the horns on the head. And he told me he had a confession. He had accidentally driven into Harlem in New York, and he confessed that this bothered him so much that he turned up the windows to his car, and he just thought he had to confess to me. And many, many years later, in, you know, 2008, I wrote the following, thinking back to that period. And here's my two paragraphs. I cannot help liberal socialists who break out in a cold sweat when they meet black people. It is they who have the problem, not the black people, nor I. When I finally confront him with a simple question as to what it is he expects white South Africans to then do, given their circumstances, he rants on about Europe's slavery and his own country's colonialism, that's Denmark, and then, before storming out of the office, he utters the words that will define Western liberal socialists to me for the rest of my life. Quote, "You are a sick anachronism and a blot on the name of Europe. You should just die."
Wow.
Unquote.
And that's not something somebody wrote online in a chat room to a bunch of strangers. I mean, he said that to your face.
He had the depth of character to stand up. He's full 6'6", minus the horns on the head, and yell this into my face before running out of the office. So I wrote, if I ever had any doubt as to the fate that liberals in the Northern Hemisphere had in mind for me and mine, this certainly makes it clear. But I have no idea why I should die for what is vividly obviously their guilty conscience. Nevertheless, it clarifies for me that Afrikaners in South Africa are destined to be the galactic whipping boy for the guilty conscience of Europeans and Americans regarding colonialism and slavery respectively. For both groupings, it is cheap and easy to redeem the sins of their grandfathers, unquote, from the safety of their coffee shops. There are no real consequences for them in recommending the destruction of my society, merely because I am to them a reminder of those sins to which my society and I personally bear no witness whatsoever. And this is exactly the position that your formal media, the BBC, and all those organizations have. And these people have had that position basically since the year 1800. That is why, at the time of the Great Boer War of the British against our 40,000 farmers in 1899, the British created concentration camps for us. And the New York Times, the Grey Lady itself, the one that never errs and that you should believe without qualification, like now when they're talking about people conniving in the White House, it wrote that the ladies in the Boer concentration camps can play tennis all day.
All day. Well, hell, that's worth being
and
there.
That is this while, 30,000 of them and their children, mostly children, died.
Wow.
No, they're playing tennis. The New York Times will have you believe they're playing tennis.
Sure.
Okay, so just trust me when I don't
trust.
Because
that's what usually goes on in concentration camps.
So, forgive me, but this is where I'm coming from. I don't know about people who have political debates in the U.S. and divide the country from one end to the other into flyover country and the two liberal coasts, and they mouth off about principles that they never suffer. They get together in their coffee shops to debate this, but meanwhile, every utterance they make causes thousands of people elsewhere to die. It is time that these people suffer the consequences of their actions and their words, because they lead to people like that Malema that you heard singing on the stage, turning his fingers into a gun, shouting, brr, pa, pa, pa.
Yeah.
This is what it looks like. Okay? So that's the media. I had a friend contact me the other day. He is a liberal South African who basically says that, Harry, I had it all wrong, I confess. And then we went to eat together. He's a good Christian, he's a very good guy, and we found each other. He actually contacted me in the last few days saying, you really ought to send this stuff of yours to the New York Times and the BBC. And I told him, I'm sorry, but they want me dead.
Yeah. That's been tried.
Why would I send them any of this? They want me dead. There's nothing to debate. Okay, so that by way of calibration.
Hey, and Harry, before we move on, I guess I thought we did it, but I guess we forgot to do the break at quarter after. So we need to take a really quick break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to We the People. Please join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. As quick as we can do it. Okay. Finish that thought, Harry. And then, hey, by the way, I want to put a request in that we talk about the Lipton tea estate. Got to tell people about that, because if they don't go to the webpage and read it, they'll miss that story, and it's a good one. So, anyway.
Okay. So
I digress.
We'll get to that.
Alrighty.
So, what we've done so far is I opened the exercise by the quote from President Trump.
Mm-hmm.
I then sketch the reality on the ground right now with folks hearing the voices of the instigators themselves. Okay? And I've then moved on to the matter of why is the media so silent? Well, they've painted themselves in that corner for many, many, many decades. They can't speak the truth now because it will prove they've been lying for 50 years. So they compromised, and there's no way out of that corner. They have to maintain the lie, otherwise how are they going to explain this to rational people? So I would like to be done now with this useless mainstream media, because they're no good to man or beast. And I would like to then get to the numbers and the Lipton tea thing.
Okay.
And on the way there, I think it's important that a couple of very basic, drop-dead important historical facts just be put on the table. Otherwise, those numbers of things mean nothing. So if you'll indulge me, I've got them written down here, and I'll go through them really quickly. When the Dutch settled the Cape of Good Hope, the thing that became South Africa, in 1652, the nearest black people were 700 miles away. They were behind the 350-millimeter summer rainfall line with its higher rainfall and tall grass for cattle grazing. Their civilization was built based on milk, and they invaded from the northeast, supplanting the indigenous Khoi and San people, completely different races from the black people. Completely different. Now, the interesting little bit around that is that the new president of South Africa, the one that's now instigating the land expropriation, his people arrived at the far northeastern tip of South Africa exactly the same time as the white people arrived at the far southwestern tip. So how's that for the pot and the kettle and the color thereof? Okay. The next thing is, it took two generations until 1702 before white people met black people over land about 500 to 600 miles east of Cape Town. It took five generations until 1780 before the first major armed clash at the thing called the Great Fish River. And then the important point, in view of what I said about my Danish friend earlier, who was worried about the slavery by Europe and the US. No indigenous black South African person was ever enslaved by any white man from anywhere. But Nelson Mandela's Amakosa did enslave the Amafangu. Period. The Portuguese slave traders, from whom the US bought slaves, they bypassed the South African coast because they couldn't get on with the Khoi people. It is the white South Africans, not the black, whose ancestors were slaves of the Dutch. They were often Indian or Indonesian, and sometimes black or black East or West Africa.
And now, people are called colored.
Yes.
That's where the term colored comes from.
Yes. Okay. Yes. And so, there's a certain equivalence with the term in the United States, but you have to be really careful in using that. The black people of South Africa, the ones who call themselves black rather than colored, they are people of Central African origin. They have never left Africa, and they were not slaves of anybody, the ones who came into South Africa. So they don't have the experience of slavery that black Americans have, period. Okay, and okay. By the craziest of ironies, it is the white South Africans who actually have African slave ancestors, not the blacks. I am a good example of a guy who has a black slave ancestor. Go figure. Okay?
And that's never told.
That's never told. It's like this conference I went to, and I stood up and I said, I am the African American in the room.
I bet that
the other guys here are black Americans. I'm the African. They're not. They're just Americans who happen to be black. And you guys got a problem with that? I'll call you a racist. Folks have a really hard time dealing with that, but it's reality. Yeah, I had to fill in a census form once in the U.S. I didn't know what to do, so I wrote, white African, what am I supposed to do? Since 1814, white Afrikaners in South Africa have had no right of return to Europe, unlike the colonial Portuguese, colonial British, colonial French. And the Afrikaner was not part of Europe's 1800s scramble for Africa. They gave their lives fighting against Britain's colonial expansion, just like Americans did. The Germans didn't invent concentration camps. The British created concentration camps for Afrikaners in the Great Boer War. Of this author's Boyan's family who entered those camps, 57% died in those camps. Okay, so just so folks understand that 95% of what they've been told by the general media is complete, utter, and total garbage. Okay?
Which is how it's allowed to go on, and without a little bit of study, and without, you know, it's no different than going to a foreign city without a tour guide. You usually don't see what there is to see.
You'll see the Starbucks and the Winchell's Donuts.
But need the tour guide.
Yeah.
Thanks for that, Harry.
I have a suspicion you're coming up to a break any second now.
Yeah, we got about a minute. Yeah, because we ran the other one long.
So what I would like
at the switch.
Where I would like to go next is to the numbers, and then during that next break, I'll grab quickly for my details on the Lipton tea exercise, because you all know about Lipton tea.
Yeah.
Don't you? Everybody knows Lipton tea. Am I allowed to use a trade name like
sure.
that?
Oh, sure. Sure. We don't get in trouble for anything. Well, except when Bill says bad words when he thinks he's off the air and he's really on the air.
Yeah, well.
And then Jared has to go into whack-a-mole.
I never talked that way. I don't know what got into me.
And I heard
I've never heard you say anything like that.
I heard that, and I'm going to tell my mother.
Yeah, my mother always said people that talk that way are that way. So, you know, that's...
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Do we need to take a break?
We'll do that. Let's take a really quick break. We'll come right back, and then we'll get a slightly longer segment next time with our guest, Dr. Harry Bouillons. We're discussing South Africa. We hope you're enjoying it. Well, or probably not. You're probably ripping your hair out, but at least you're learning something. You can find all the information we're discussing at wethepeopleradio.us. Radio. Our guest is Dr. Harry Bouillons, and he's going to hit us with numbers. And we're going to chat about Lipton tea, so, you know.
So, Africa, murder, land grabs, and drinking tea. What a hell of a combination.
How could you go wrong?
Yeah. Okay, so, when you listen to your... media, the ABCs, CBSs, and so forth, the general mainstream media. I hate that term. We should find another word for it. But basically those guys who subscribe to the philosophy of I should just die because I'm there. They would tell you that 80% of the land in South Africa is owned by white farmers. And sometimes they say 72, and then others say 90%, and the numbers go all over the show. So let me first just address the brute force numbers. I have treated this before in another program, but I think it's worth repeating because it's so in your face wrong. First of all, the South African government's own report of 2017, November 2017, states that individual white farmers, the people who are being murdered and threatened with expropriation, they own 26.8 million hectares of land.
Wow.
Don't get lost on how large a hectare is. It's like about, you know, 100 yards by 100 yards. Now, I don't always trust the CIA. I think, you know, for good reason.
I was going to say, there's a reason for that.
And yeah, it's given the job they sometimes have to do. I have actually some sympathy with them in that matter. But they surely themselves understand that one can't always trust them because it's their job to sometimes do things a little bit woolly. Now, but there's one area where I think most of the world will accept their statements, and that is when they quote things like the size of the country, for example. Do you think that's a reasonable place when we might quote them? Because, I mean, if they get that wrong, there's going to be a couple of million people calling them on that one. Now, they say that the surface area of South Africa is 122 million hectares. Now, you don't need a calculator to put 26.8 million above the line and 122 million below the line and do the maths. You can see it's round about, you know, somewhere between a fifth and a quarter. In fact, if you do divide it out, the answer is exactly 21.8%. So using the CIA size for South Africa and that very same ANC government who wants to expropriate land, you use their number for how much is owned by white farmers, the answer is 21.8%.
Okay.
Where do you think this mainstream media gets its 80% from? I don't get it. Okay? So, that's my first problem with them. If they don't mind me saying it, it would seem that there is a general problem with maths at the liberal end of the political spectrum. Certainly, communists can't do maths, and they have a fundamental misunderstanding of how human beings behave.
But well, you're trying to get a peek behind the curtain there. Come on, Harry. Stay on point.
So, you can, as you can see, you can become a Danish professor without maths.
Yeah, you can.
You too.
Amazing. It's utterly amazing to me. So, it took a gentleman who until recently was a professor of economics at the University of California, did an interview with me recently, and he said, yeah, but Harry, you know, they're talking about arable land. And my answer is, I'm sorry, sir, I didn't say this on the show. I thought I would spare him the embarrassment. But sorry, but that's not what they're saying. I haven't found the word arable in any one of those statements. I just found they own so much. And sometimes people add the word farming land. But now, let's use the same CIA to check up on another number. And it has to do with the word arable. So the question becomes, how much of South Africa is arable? And the answer is 10%. Okay. Right. So let me get this straight. 10% is arable. Now, arable, for those who don't know, means you can grow stuff on it. The same CIA says all forms of agriculture, how much of the country is given to that? And the answer is 80%. Now, I don't know how much driving you guys do in the vicinity of Las Vegas, but it's not exactly prime agricultural country. Okay? And that's what most of the west of South Africa looks like. In fact, I took a picture in Nevada, central Nevada, the back road that goes to the national parks of California. There's sure. A back entry that takes you over the mountain. I drove that road before it became the extraterrestrial highway. And had a hell of an experience there because an F4 and an F5 buzzed my car, you know, in the middle of a drive where there's no other car on the road for hours to suddenly have an F4 and an F5 go over your car at 50 feet is quite an experience.
Wow.
Oh.
That's how I knew there was an Air Force base nearby.
Would have been
anyway,
a clue, yeah.
On that same day, sorry for diverging, but on that same day I took a picture in that area, and that is what the west of South Africa looks like. I showed the picture to my family back in South Africa and asked them, where's this? And they said, probably a couple of miles outside Beaufort West in South Africa. Okay, so South Africa, much of it looks like Nevada. Not exactly prime agricultural country.
No, you can't just fall into farming in a place like that. I mean, you've got to know what you're doing.
Yeah, you got to have water.
The other thing I noticed in that part of the world is I didn't see any sheep and I didn't see any cattle. I know they got them further north, but there's not a lot of cattle there.
No.
Okay. So, what would you say if I told you that the CIA acknowledges that 70% of South Africa is used for pasture, and that's a good reflection on the farmers in that country, because they figured out how to actually use country that looks like much of Nevada in order to raise sheep and goats. But these would be Angora goats and Karakul and so forth, and some Merino. So there should be, great accolades given to these farmers. They figured out how to make the world's most barren country into something that produces really serious money-turning commodities, like wool.
Sure.
Okay?
And food.
Yeah, and that's
always handy.
That's not in, you know, wool is not really in the vocabulary of the black nations of southern Africa. So they never learned how to do any of that in the dry country, and that is why they are beholden to the 350 millimeters minimum rainfall. They need that because their lifestyle was based on cattle. So the next thing that the CIA says is that the royal total of 0.3% of South African surface area is under permanent crops. Okay? So you're talking here about a country that is bone dry in the west, useful only along the western and southern coast, but the interior of the west is bone dry, and these farmers have figured out how to farm there, how to do wool, what do you call it? Well, animal husbandry in the form of goats, sheep, but not cattle. And so now this ANC government comes along, and to pad its numbers against white people, it adds in that western part of the country to say this is how the numbers are skewed. So it's like starting a fight about Pennsylvania, which is nice and arable, and then throwing in most of Nevada, southern pieces of Oregon, southern New Mexico, southern Arizona, you know, take all the dry country, throw that in, and make it look as though people have this enormous slice of Pennsylvania. So
yeah.
that's how they're playing this game. Okay? So I did a calculation, and it said, if you look at that rainfall line and you look at the distribution of language, then you'll find the Afrikaans language, which is my mother tongue, is dominant in the two western provinces of the country. ANC doesn't have traction there. If you remove those areas from the country, plus the cold high ground where there were never black people, or not to a serious degree, if you remove that from consideration and you recalculate the numbers, then here's what you get. The surface area that remains, by the government's own calculation, is 71.8 million hectares instead of 122. The remaining area white farmers own in that part of the world is 12.5 million hectares. That means 17.4%. So if you look at the area that can realistically be talked about as being in contention, you've removed all the BS numbers. You're down to 17.4%. Where on earth is the ownership by one-tenth of the population, the fact that they own 17% of the land? How, and since they are the ones who created the concept of commercial farming in the country, how is that an out-of-line number? And I'm saying that from the following point of view. Historically in South Africa, and even still today, still today to a very large degree, the black farmers, or the so-called farmers, are subsistence crop people. They have a patch of land which the chief gives to them, the chief of the tribe gives to them. On there, they'll put in a couple of head of corn, a couple of pumpkins, you know, stuff like that, a couple of beans. And for the rest of the time, they chase their cows into the nearby pasture and they keep a couple of goats. And the end result is they're not growing crops for the nation. They're not feeding a nation. They're basically feeding themselves and their proximate family.
And they're not overfeeding their family. These aren't giant gardens.
And you see, the thing is, I'm not sure that you have any subsistence farmers in North America. There may be guys who are unsuccessful and don't achieve much more than feeding themselves. But The idea of the bulk of the people being subsistence farmers, that is not something that North America is used to. So when I have a conversation with people more to the left of the spectrum and I use the term subsistence farming, they kind of look at me and they don't know what I mean, because in their world, the farmer is a guy with a huge tract of land, many John Deere tractors. They put large areas of land under corn, they plow like crazy, and they're the enemy of socialists. Okay? So they don't understand the concept of subsistence farming. Africa is mainly a subsistence farming country. And so this kind of stuff brings me to this matter of Lipton tea.
Okay, hold that thought, and let's do that right after the break, and then we'll have a full 14 minutes for you.
Because I'm going to know what's going on with the Lipton tea.
I know, and you know, honestly, folks, I really do hope that you go to the page at WeThePeopleRadio.us and look under the bright red topic that says "For discussion on today's show." There's an article that I've noted is a must read, and it is terrific. It'll give you all this information, show you all the little maps of where all the people are, and it'll put all this, it'll give you a visual for this idea about South Africa, because most of us really don't know that much about it. It's a great place to get a good solid overview with fact. Imagine that. So we'll be back with our guest, Dr. Harry Booyens, in just a couple of minutes.
Yep.
It's a great example of what happens when you get rid of the farmers and replace them with people who don't know what they're doing. And I don't care what country you're in on that one.
Okay. So, by way of illustration, what happens after land expropriation, I give you the Mahoba Tea Estate, formerly known as Lipton Tea. So, this is what the president of the country calls, to Obama and others, quote, unlocking the economic potential of the land. That's what he calls it. Here's the history. This place was created in the subtropical heaven of Tsanin under the name Sapeco Tea in 1964 by the industrial development of the very much hated apartheid government. It operated as part of the Lipton Tea family. I actually have pictures of that which I took there, but I'll have to dig a while to find them again. By the year 2000, it was producing 60% of all tea drunk by South Africans with a revenue of 160 million local rand. Okay? That's serious money in that country. In 2006, or 2004 really, a bunch of black people filed a land restitution claim, which they won, and so the estate was given to them. Along with the government paid the owners 104 million. It was valued at 120. They were paid 104. And the 600 families were given 15 million South African rand as investment to make this thing work. Now, you can go and read the reports for yourself and cry your eyes out. But by 2012, another 9 million was plowed into the what they called business, I put quotes around it, along with another 5 million of equipment. Projections were made that 30 million of the business could still be saved. But by 2012, the last 300 workers were laid off. There is a 2014 report and a 2017 report, both of which basically say, it's dead, it's gone, it's over, the tea bushes are 10 foot high, etc. It would appear that there's a period where there was absolutely no tending to anything whatsoever. So I wrote that this happens over and over. At the root of all of it lies the fact that African people, when it comes to planting, are by nature and conviction subsistence farmers. They don't really have the vaguest idea what a commercial farmer is, except that he's white. That's certainly a generalization, but it's 99% true in Southern Africa. Now, in this particular case, 600 families were moved onto that estate, and each family proceeded to gut the place, grow a few head of corn, a few beans, a few pumpkins, chase their few cows in there, and then their few goats. And there they sat. In the process, according to a forensic report, they stripped the place of 121 million rand of assets.
Jeez. Wow.
I don't have to go and look. I can tell you right now that the fittings to all the buildings will have been stripped and sold as junk to dealers for cash. This is what always happens because it happened to our family farm. But we're called racist when we explain that, you know, and people choke on their lattes and Chardonnay when I explain these things. But I'm sure, you know, you'll understand why the black South African population exploded with the advent of the white guys, because guess who fed them? And this is why, you know, South African farmers are riding around with signs on their trucks reading, "No farmer, no pup." And the word pup in Afrikaans means porridge. Everybody calls it pup. So, no farmer, no porridge. And porridge is the staple of most of the black population in South Africa. The commercial farmer is synonymous with food on the table. And it's like these guys just don't get it. But I went off to a mall recently in Canada, where a stupid little girlie walked up and told me she's collecting for the United Nations. And she told me, with, you know, stars glinting in her eyes, that she's collecting money so they can give every farmer in Africa a goat for milk. Now, in the first place, this girlie couldn't tell the front end of a goat from the rear, okay? Secondly, goats will eat whatever is left on a tree when all else has stopped finding anything to eat, and they'll eat the bark if they have to.
Oh, sure.
Now, well, the problem machines is, you know, there are lots of folks who hang around cities and they ride around, like, I worked with a lady who had a bumper sticker that read, "Just visiting this planet." She doesn't know the rear end of a goat. Okay? She doesn't know what they eat. So, by the time the goat is finished, the farmer will chop down the tree for firewood, burn it. He'll get his wife to carry the firewood on the head because he's a man, he doesn't do work, okay? That's how it works in Africa. Then when it's all gone and there's a rainstorm and the place washes away into, I think you guys call it an arroyo and we call it a donga, then they're going to get onto the BBC and the New York Times, and the grey lady is then honestly going to report, "Oh dear, they are starving. They need aid."
Here we go again.
And then gullible, nice Americans and Canadians will fork out money so the farmers can go and commit suicide by goat again. So in case you don't believe me, I've mailed Erin a picture of goats in the top of a tree. Because there really are people who don't believe me when I say the goats will eat what's left on the tree. Okay? And that is the story of Africa. And that is how everything, I don't know how else to put it, but that's how everything goes to hell if you just leave them alone.
Well, I liked your comment here. The gullible, nice Canadians will fork out money and pick a country. I mean, not just the Canadians, but so that those farmers can commit suicide by goat again.
Yeah, well, I don't know what else to call it. You know, I can write long sentences.
But it's called suicide by goat is good.
You know, and so now I'd like to go right back to President Trump's quote. And my request to him would be, "Sir, you have the right information. There are people who are well-informed, who are happy to stand ready to give you the information you need to make the right decisions. Do not listen to your mainstream media. Trust your gut. They're a bunch of liars." Okay? Don't trust them. I don't trust them anyway around this latest story about somebody in the White House. I would double-check it. Anyway, I would, quite frankly, ask him to apply personal sanctions to the individuals who run around South Africa, the politicians who sing, "Kill the Boer, kill the farmer," the ones who instigate blatant race-based laws. I thought you guys all cheered when that was done away with. Why is everybody looking away when it's re-implemented? I want those done away with. And quite frankly, it is time the world got as upset with these bunch of racists that we have now as what it got with the previous ones. The fact that these ones are black is no excuse. So I think the time has come for the U.S. State Department to take action. They are not beholden to Congress. They have their own leg to stand on, and foreign policy is in the hands of the president. So I think the time has come for sanctions targeted, as they are in the Russian case and in the Iranian case, against individuals who are over the line of decent people internationally. The time has come for that. These folks are not going to stop. These murders are not going to stop until these people get to feel pain.
Well, and just, you know, not to beat the subject in the head, but I mean, I think you kind of have to point out to folks that the people who are the farmers on this land didn't steal it from anybody. They didn't.
No.
They didn't display, and we've got plenty of hours of radio to, you know, tell this tale that is sitting right there on the page for today, that these farmers came here several hundred years ago. There was nobody there when they went there. They turned them into farms. Now, for some reason, they owe this land back to somebody else. They're not being paid for it. They're being killed, and it's being stolen. And then the land turns into a wasteland.
Aaron,
that whole thing
back,
is like just stupid.
Just go back to the young lady, the black one, who said, we are going to take everything you own. This has nothing to do with land being arable. This has nothing to do with farm. It has nothing to do with it. It has to do with
people see
what a white guy has, and because he's white, they want to take it. It's that blunt. It's that brutal. It's that in your face. There's no doubt about it. They're saying it to you. Try to believe it when they say it.
Yeah. And if this were happening anywhere else, there would be outrage, you know, and it would be a genocide. If all the white guys were doing this in reverse, this would be intolerable.
Yeah.
And yet, for some reason, this is cheered on by their government.
But it is cheered on in this case because the Western media stands behind the professor who told me I should die. That's why. They're living off a guilt gland. You know, their hypothalamus and their brains have been replaced by a gland called the guilt gland.
Yeah, and the sad part is, I don't know, you know, if they got something out of this, the bad part is they're actually going to get famine out of this.
Yes.
So
and the people who are standing behind this, who are defending all of this internationally, they are the ones who are going to cough up the money for more goats.
Yeah.
No, I fear the people who are going to cough up the money for more goats are right here in the United States.
Of course they are.
That's what I mean. Yeah, we're going to end up paying for this.
They're going to collect here.
All you have to do is watch National Geographic and watch one program on wolves. And, you know, suddenly wolves in Yellowstone made more grass. It's like, oh, come on. So, you know, I know they can sell almost anything, but we're into the last here 30 seconds or so, and so we just want to thank you for taking the time to come on and explain this, and yep, we've been doing a lot of shows on South Africa, but they're all different.
We're going to keep watching this because
this is crazy. People are not talking about it enough. There are not enough people who actually know what has gone on to be able to make sense of what is going on.
And it's coming for you.
And
that's the frightening part.
Yes, and if you think it's only happening in South Africa, you're a lunatic. And hey, if you're in love with socialism, you might want to look at South Africa, because it's a really good example of what you don't want. So anyway, our guest has been Dr. Harry Booyens. We appreciate you.
Thanks for having me.
Tons. We'll have the archive posted here shortly, and please send it to your friends. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.